Good Tuesday. Today is September the 23rd, and you're listening to My Farm. Today we are going to visit with two staff members from the Ohio Soybean Council, that being Mackenzie Joseph and Kylie Holbrook, as they recently took a trip to South Korea and Japan in support of Ohio soy. We'll be back with all the details and their experiences after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
Joining me today, I have Kylie Holbrook and Mackenzie Joseph with the Ohio Soybean Council. Ladies, thanks so much for your time. You guys just got back from a big trip over to Japan. Kylie, tell me a little bit about it. What was the purpose of the trip and where'd you go?
So we were there with the United Soybean Export Council on their annual learning mission. And really the purpose of this trip was to go and explore kind of how USEC works in other countries and how they help market Ohio and the U.S. soybeans to other countries internationally.
So how many folks participated?
We had 29 farmers and staff from 12 different qualified soybean states in the U.S. So it was a pretty large group over there.
That sounds like it. Well, Mackenzie, I'm curious, some of the different things you guys got to see or learn about while you were there.
Yeah, so we actually were able to travel to both South Korea and Japan. So starting off our trip in South Korea, we jumped right into it with our first visit to a crushing plant. So getting to see, you know, firsthand oil from U.S. soybeans being produced. So then in that afternoon, we got to go to the Incheon port. So another element of the soybean supply chain, getting to see, you know, U.S. beans coming into that port. Continuing on with the trip, we got to see a soy milk facility. We got to see feed mills. We also were fortunate enough to have USEC staff brief us on each of these markets when we arrived to both of the countries, giving us an overview of the market at the time, you know, the use of soy and the variations in those markets, both of them having an emphasis on the food grade element as well as use for feed and other items such as skincare, especially in the Korean market. But it was really overall just a way to see kind of every element of the soybean supply chain and how those markets are utilizing American and Ohio soybeans.
Very good. Kylie, I'm curious, maybe some of the, not necessarily takeaways, but surprises to you, things you didn't expect on the trip.
Yeah, so I guess me being new with the Ohio Soybean Council, I didn't quite realize the complexity of the U.S. soy market internationally. So when we went to specifically South Korea, they're very well developed when it comes to U.S. soy. A lot of their products that use U.S. soy have this marketing label that says sustainable U.S. soy. And it says it right there on the package. They have it on buses that drive around the city. It's really all over the place because there they rely so heavily on the sustainability that we can provide here in the U.S. So that was a huge surprise to me going over there.
Kenzie, same question.
Just from the communications perspective, the people that we talked to there and, you know, how they talked about U.S. soy and like Kylie said, you know, the preference for it and really seeing that quality for U.S. soy. I was also surprised just learning about the populations of these countries and how much, you know, they depend on importing not only U.S. soy but other agricultural products to sustain their population. I think, you know, half of the population of South Korea lives in the Seoul greater area. So even just being there and looking at that and thinking about all of the products that we were bringing over to feed the city that I was literally looking at in front of me, it was just really interesting to wrap my head around that.
Very good. Again, my guests today, Kylie Holbrook and Mackenzie Joseph, both with the Ohio Soybean Council, talking about their learning mission to Japan, all that part of the U.S. Soy Export Council, or otherwise known as USEC. Ladies, thanks for your time. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance. protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to change directions now. Take a little bit of a deeper dive into USDA's corn crop projections. USDA's Rod Bain tells us more.
Were there surprises associated with the USDA September corn crop production forecast? According to Chief Economist Seth Meyer,
I think the big surprise was things which may be built on acreage changes from August.
This month's crop production reports were the first of this year based on objective yield surveys by National Agricultural Statistics Service field enumerators.
So we ended up actually adding 1.47 million additional acres of corn. That gets us to 98.7 million acres of corn. We haven't been at this level of corn acreage planting since the 1930s.
It was increased acreage and record crop yield forecast last month that indicated far and away record corn production beyond what many experts and analysts expected. Yet Meyer notes, analysts were also thinking,
given some of the challenges of the crop as it's finishing, the last yield estimate we got was 188.8 bushels an acre, but the crop isn't done at that point of the year. So there was some thought, well, maybe there's some challenges in how the crop is finishing. I think that the yield reduction to 186.7 bushels an acre was perhaps anticipated, but with that acreage change, you actually had an increase in production despite the yield decline.
Which was, for the most part, unexpected. The chief economist says just as surprising, perhaps, despite the increase in the already projected record corn production forecast, how the market reacted shortly after the report's release.
Corn futures are up 8 cents.
Reflecting what Meyer says is industry comfortability with use projections for corn within the U.S. supply and demand balance sheet.
They're pushing a lot of that extra corn into ethanol production. We had a record corn export program last year, and we actually reduced carryout stocks this month for the coming crop year or the current crop year because we raised exports.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great day.